Sports 360, or weekend preview show for the major sports events coming on this weekend. I'm Lance, here with our resident analyst, Mario, from Live Sports Team.
What's going on, man? Good, I'm excited to do this. I'm very excited.
Yeah, of course. It is our first show. We want to explore, in about 20 minutes or so, we want to explore the major events, sporting events coming up for this weekend. A lot on the table, because this is one of the busiest period in the sports calendar globally. So some of the events coming up, we have El Clasico, we have major matchups in the English Premier League. Across Europe, there is cricket going on as well. NFL is in its season. And, there are lots of always, as sports would have it, a lot of topical issues in other sporting arenas. But we want to just get at it and get into it right away. Mario, we want to take a look at the much look forward to game this weekend, which is on Sunday morning at Old Trafford, where Liverpool will travel to Man United to play this Sunday. Both teams are coming off 3-2 victories in the Champions League. Man U with a 3-2 victory over Atalanta, and Liverpool 3-2 as well over Atletico Madrid. Man U being rescued in the final moments there by Cristiano Ronaldo. What's your take on the matchup coming up on Sunday, Mario?
So first and foremost, Man United can't keep depending on Cristiano Ronaldo to do everything. And I've said it to one of my friends before that I don't fear Ronaldo in these big games anymore, because he no longer has a team around him that can basically carry him as close as possible to the finish line and then allow him to finish. Now, yes. Atalanta is a team that they should be beating. And that Atletico Madrid and Liverpool, that's almost like a rival of the Champions League. But I expect Liverpool to win this match. It's the same scoreline that both teams had for the Champions League. That's how this week will end. And I'll put team favor for Liverpool.
You're expecting a 3-2 Liverpool victory.
Yeah, I expect the two grown men in the Man United squad, Cavani and CR7, to do what they usually do in big games. Because those guys are the only guys who are used to this type of condition. And whether Cavani comes on as a sub or he starts, I think those two will be the goal scorers for Man United. I think Salah and Mane will score as well. I just think the big guys are going to step up. And I think Liverpool is going to get a goal from either in midfield from Amamitor or from one of the other clubs.
Okay, so that sounds like a reasonable prediction, because Liverpool is in good scoring form, but also has been, defense is a bit shaky. Yeah? So they have been letting in goals regularly. So there should be a few goals in this matchup. But before we finish off on this topic, just tell me quickly, what's your take on Thiago in Liverpool? He's injured now, but so far I haven't really been impressed. What's your take?
Okay, so with Thiago, you have to remember Thiago is coming from Barcelona, then to Bayern. This squad is the first high-paced squad he's ever really in. Yeah. And the way that the midfield operates, the way that your midfield trio operates, the reason why Wijnaldum played better than Thiago, because and even Almamy Torres having success in his midfield, is because both of those guys are box-to-box midfielders who have created it in the past. Whereas you brought in a Thiago Alcantara, who is an aging deep-line player. Granted, he's still in his prime.
So you think Thiago is taking some time to adjust. He's a quality player. And in time, maybe he should come through.
Yes, but I think Klopp should use him a bit more, allow him a lot more chances to perform. Because I don't think, I think if you play him as a deep line playmaker in this squad, he will slow down your midfield too much.
Okay.
The club midfield requires that high pace. Now, of course, he can play at that high pace, yes, but I would have Almami Touré play the box-to-box role, that high energy role where you're just running box-to-box, helping out Fabinho defend, helping out Mesa. But I wouldn't allow Thiago to sit in this system because you won't get the most out of the vision, passing, or even his goal scoring.
So you don't think he's being used the best way right now? Okay. All right. Understand.
Yeah, well, I can't blame Klopp for that. Here's why. Because he is naturally a deep line player for Thiago. So you can't wrong him for trying to use him where he's been used best throughout his career.
Okay. All right. So we look forward to that game. I mean, coming up. I mean, should be. It's a rivalry. It's an age-old rivalry. And so no matter how the teams are positioned, normally they try to show up for a game like this. You know, I mean. So let's see how that plays out.
Now, That's why I specified the goal scorers because. In this match, it's the big guys who've been there in this type of atmosphere who are
Understood. Let's skip over quickly over to Spain, where we have El Clásico, usually regarded as the most hotly contested rivalry in maybe sports and in world football, but both teams are not at their best at the moment. Real Madrid and Barcelona, the match will be at Camp Nou on Sunday as well. That match will be kicking off earlier on Sunday morning, even earlier than the Man U Liverpool game. What's your take, Mario? What are we looking at Camp Nou on Sunday?
The problem with this match is that I'm unsure about it because neither of these teams are at their best now. Both teams are transitioning into a new generation, which it took too long. Both teams took too long to do. Barca took very long to do it while they were losing, and Madrid got blinded by the trophies that they were winning and being the transition squad. This match is too volatile to predict anything because on one hand, you might see the most exciting El Clasico in a long time because both of these teams have young players who can either completely disappoint you and this is the most boring El Clasico you've ever watched, or they could step up in this match and you're seeing the next generation of El Clasico. Right.
That's very unpredictable. The players haven't even shown much, the young players even haven't shown much consistency yet that you can bank on to say, okay, all right, yes, we're going to have this type of game or that type of game. Even the playing styles of the teams right now is being ironed out as I'm noticing, I'm observing. So it's a very difficult match to call, but that's why you're the expert. You have to give us a take here.
I still do have a scoreline. As you said, that this is still El Clásico. And the last time I checked, Benzema still plays some Madrid. And Depay, to me, is a player that can step up in games like these. I'm not sure if Aguero has been deemed fit to play, or Ousmane Dembele, or Felipe Coutinho.
Yes.
But if those guys are in this game, it should be interesting. Now, I do think that the game will be more boring if the experienced guys are the ones who take over. But let's say that the youngsters are the ones who really step up, like for example, for Barca, Ansu Fati, Pedri, Ricky Puig, Youssef Demir, if those guys step up and light up El Clasico, I think it would be exciting. From Madrid's side, if Vinicius, Rodrigo, Asensio, if those young guys really are the ones who step up, then I think it will be exciting. If it comes down to the experienced players having to step up, I think you're going to see a boring El Clasico. And I still see it ending up 2-1 Barcelona just because it's at the Camp Nou. If it was at the Bernabeu, I would actually beat Madrid 2-1. I don't see it as a high scoring affair because I'm unsure of what they will bring, but they're still players who can score.
Okay, so advantage Barca home team. I don't want your comment, I don't want your respond, but I think Coutinho should go back to Liverpool. Over to Italy, where Inter will be taking on Juventus. That is also historically a very heated match. I don't know where both teams are at now. I mean, I don't know if they are rebuilding. I don't know. Tell me what's going on there, Mario.
All right, so Inter are the Serie A champions from last season, under Antonio Conte.
Yes.
This season, they've been good so far. They look like the favorites to win again because not only has the team... A lot of people thought that when they lost Lukaku, that the team would start to lose its goals, but they have Lautaro Martinez, who is currently one of the best strikers to me in world football. And one of the most underrated. He reminds me of Carlos Tevez.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. But Inter are the defending champions. They've kept most of the squad that won last year. And Juventus are the ones going through a rebuilding process. They just rehired Allegri. And like I said, I think it was addition by subtraction by letting go of Ronaldo. And what Man United did was take on Juventus's problem. Cristiano Ronaldo is great. But unless you are playing him in a very specific system that doesn't require him to be a part of the link-up play that much, and you can just cross the ball into the box, you're not going to get the best out of him. Zidane had to switch to a 4-4-2 diamond from a 4-3-3 because he had to put as many players, creative players, in midfield and then allow his wing-backs to cross the ball into CR7 and Benzema because you know that CR7 can't do the link-up play and running up and down anymore. He's still a clutch player, but if you're not going to put him in the best position to be that way, then you're not going to get him.
So we're seeing Inter Milan has been a little bit inconsistent in recent in the league, in the Serie A, but are third place now, just 4 points adrift. Well, it's about, well, it's not four, it's like 7 points adrift of the lead. Yeah, but Juve, I mean, is deeper down the table and
seven,
but has been more consistent. I mean, they have been picking up the pace recently. They have they haven't lost in the last five games. Have won the last four, and are hungry for points. So, based on that, tell me how you see this one playing out. I mean, the match is being played at the San Siro. I mean, what do you see as a result?
Okay, so just to comment quickly on their inconsistency, you have to remember they changed their coach to Simone Inzaghi, who's the brother of, you know, Felipe. AC Milan legend Felipe.
Oh, yeah.
And Simone uses the same formation, but his playing style is a bit different. His playing style is actually a lot more attractive to watch than Antonio Conte's.
Right.
But it does require the players to adjust. And I think the players are adjusting to the playing style because even though it's a lot more fast-paced and a bit more fluid and more fun to play, you still have to balance it with the defensive side. And Antonio Conte had them defensively ready and then hit you on the counter. But with this manager plays Antonio Conte's defensive formation, but in almost like a tiki-taka match, like a Pep.
It sounds like you're setting me up for an Inter win.
Inter should win. They should be the favorites.
Okay. But you have a scoreline in?
Yes, but here's a good thing about this Serie A. Antonio Conte is not the manager of Inter. So guess what? This match may end up 5.
May end up?
Five, three.
5-3. Wow.
That's yes, a bold because again, prediction, man. Here's a reason why. If you notice Simeone's Lazio team, they were not the best defensive, but it was guns blazing. We're going to shoot it out with you. We will not give up until the final. But this will not be a sit back and defend classic Italian match. No, that's not how Simeone does his football. It's constant attack, attack. If the match end 4-4, cool. If the match end 5-4, cool. Look back at his Lazio record. Every team he plays, there are matches where Simeone's teams goes down 3-0 and they do not give up. It's 5-3. They will not stop attacking. And that's a difference.
So you're looking for a high-scoring game, very high-scoring game, 5-3. That's a very bold prediction, suggesting as well that you have sufficient strike force and that the defenses are sufficiently vulnerable to allow for a scoreline like that. Very interesting for Inter. But we have to move over to France because we have a game over by France, PSG. I mean, and really the League One is supposed to be a canter for PSG every season nowadays, especially with the addition of, I don't know how much it's helping with the addition of the GOAT, Lionel Messi, as some would have it. But so tell me what you see about the Marseille versus PSG. Tell me a little bit about this matchup. What makes it so interesting?
What makes it interesting is that you have Marseille, who were once the crown jewel of France. But they were the ones who earned it over years. Teams like Marseille, Monaco, and Lyon. And a lot of these teams have a heated rivalry with PSG because they bought their way to trophies. PSG was usually like a Europa League type club. Yes, they've had legends that passed through the club, but they've never been a consistent type of contender in France.
Mm-hmm.
They've had their years where they had Ronaldinho, JJ, Kocha, sure, Pochettino, all of that. But those were like moments in their history rather than a consistent, okay, we're going to do this. Like Ludovic Julie passed through there for a while until they had money. So this match now, the problem with this match is that there's two problems that this match is going to cause. If the match can be called off.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're if you're a sports betting guy, you can get those odds like somewhere. Because both fans, and especially in Ligue 1 this year, the fans have been very rowdy. I don't know if it's because they've been inside from the pandemic, but they're very rowdy. And Neymar has been an antagonist in this match, especially because the Marseille defenders hit. And this match will get physical. You have personalities like Dimitri Payet out there.
It seems to me, Mario, you're saying that, don't want to cut you, but you're saying that this match may get physical. But I hear an undertone as if you're saying not only on the pitch, but maybe off the pitch, like you're talking about fan base and supporters and all kinds.
Yes, I'm talking about ultras getting out of control to where they have to stop the match and separate the players, put them back in the dressing room.
So we may actually get literal fireworks.
Yes. So, and again, the cards will be flying in this match.
So, but if it's not called off, what do you see as a possible scoreline or for this game?
This game is going to be a high scoring affair because Jorge Sampaoli, the Marseille coach, he's from the line of managers like Bielsa, Pep Guardiola. They're all out attack. It's a bit position based. They'll use any strange formation, any strange tactics, but they're always attractive and they're always on the attack. So this is another 3-2 match. I just think that PSG is going to win this match based on just the fact that they have Neymar, Messi, Mbappe, Di Maria.
Just because they're talented. Okay.
Yes,
okay.
But Dimitri Payet and Asim Marseille pulling off, anybody else on Marseille pulling off.
Okay. All right. Leaving there. So these games that we just highlighted, Man U, Liverpool, the El Clasico, Barca hosting Real Madrid, Inter and Juventus, and then Olympic Marseille too, and PSG. These are all on Sunday. They're all Sunday games. And if everything goes as Mario has planned, it should be a high scoring, it'd be a goal fest on Sunday, because we're looking at 3-2s, 2-1, three goals is the minimum for any of the game that he's predicting here. But we could see as much as 8 goals in the game, in the match in Italy. So it should be a goal fest Sunday morning into the Sunday afternoon for everybody looking to tune in to catch any of these games. But before we exit the stage for club football, is there any other game? I know that you're an avid fan of football, and not just European football, but globally. Is there any other game that you want to highlight, you know, bring to our attention?
All right, so the Japanese league has a game. I don't know if people are going to be able, especially here in Jamaica, will be able to watch it, but it's like, I think it's at 12 a.m.
Okay.
In Jamaica, I don't know, like, if other people around the world are going to hear
12 a.m. Sunday?
Let me check and get back to that. But in the meanwhile, while I check that.
Yes.
The Kashima Antlers will be playing Tokyo FC. And this is
Tokyo FC?
This is a heated rivalry in Japan, because you're looking at the two most decorated clubs in Japanese football history. They're both title contenders, not at this moment, but they're title contenders who have fell from grace. So they're now like, if I was to compare it to Europe, you remember when for example, Arsenal are fighting to get into the Europa League.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's how Tokyo FC are. And you remember when Liverpool was finishing seventh?
Right.
Like, that's how Kashima Antlers are.
That's like a long time ago. That's like about 40 years ago, though. Liverpool finishing seventh. I can't remember. I barely can remember something like that.
You don't want to remember those days, do you?
Okay.
It's
easier to remember Arsenal finished them, you know. But I get what you're saying.
So as I said, this is still a big rivalry, so the game will be exciting. Neither team are defensive teams, so again, a 3-2 scoreline is most likely outcome. But both of these teams are inconsistent. You never know what they'll give you on any given day. So I would
3-2 in favor of who? 3-2 in favor of?
Of the Kashima Antlers.
Okay.
I think the guys are going to represent for Zico, especially because, again, this is a rivalry that Zico, I don't know if many people know the Brazilian legend Zico. He played for Kashima Antlers after he left Brazil. Brazilian football, and he's considered the god of football in Japan.
Yes.
And not only did he lead Kashima Antlers as a player to their most historic run, when he stopped playing, he came back as a coach, and he led the team to another treble winning era. 3 years, trebles.
So
Zico beat Real Madrid. Beat Real Madrid in the Clubs World Cup final.
Club World Cup. Okay. So Zico is to that club like what Diego Maradona was to Napoli. Okay, something similar, like a talisman.
I would say even greater, because again, he came back as a manager and did the same thing again, win three trebles back to back years.
Well, let us say then he's maybe like a Zidane and Real Madrid.
Yeah, that would be a bigger. That would be a better.
Okay. All right. A final note on football. We want to come back home now to the Reggae Boys. Won their first. The last game was the first win for them. Desperate times. I think they are on 4 points or 5 points, and still at the bottom of the table. I think they are above Honduras, perhaps in the table for the World Cup qualifying. Whitmore, Jabba has been on the line. Give me a quick take. What do you think is happening with local or national team? What's going on there?
I just don't think they're utilizing what you have. Mm-hmm. You're trying to fit like square pegs into round holes. And a lot of times as a coach, you want to play your playing style, yes, and you want to use your system. But yes, being that you don't have exactly what you need, at some point as a coach, you have to adapt to what you have. And yeah, also, you're underutilizing the European players, or the players that chose to come and play for them. That's the next thing.
Underutilizing them. So you think they have a coaching problem?
I don't think it's a huge coaching problem because, again, it's not like Whitmore, especially if you look at the competitions that Whitmore has played in, his team isn't playing bad, but there is a lack of trust in the players as well. I just don't think Whitmore trusts his players enough to allow them to express themselves.
You mean so he doesn't trust any of them really? Are you trusting locals over the foreign ones? Or
no, even the foreigners. Even the foreigners. I don't think there's no bias between it. Like, he plays a rigid playing style. So Whitmore is looking at more of, okay, let me not mess this up, rather than let me go out there and take over.
Understand. Yes, because, yeah, understand. He's under so much pressure. But tell me, if there's one thing you could do to impact Jamaican national football team right now, what one action would you take?
Change the formation. Again, they're not playing terrible. Like, they're good defensively and they can create chances going forward. But if you want the best, if you want me to just list the best starting 11 with the current squad that we have that I would pick, it would be Andre Blake in goal. I would go to a back three with Michael Hector, left centre-back, Damian Lowe, right centre-back, and Moore from Reading in between them. That's the back three. Then across the midfield, I would have gone Daniel Johnson, Rafael Morris in the midfield. And the two wingers slash wingbacks would be Kemar Lawrence and Albus Powell. And the front three would be Bailey, Bobby Reed, and Junior Fleming.
Okay. All right. So you think it's just a lineup thing? You don't think that Whitmore is a terrible coach? Not, you don't think so? I mean, you think right now, if he can get the lineup right, have more trust in his players and be more confident and not trying, because right now he's basically trying to defend himself and trying to save his job. Okay.
And let me just give on it. The reason why I chose this formation is so that Whitmore doesn't have to worry about defense.
Okay.
And the reason why I picked that midfield too, and a lot of people may laugh at it if they hear it, because we've been needing a defensive. Well, you don't have a defensive midfielder that is talented enough to really make a difference in the squad. So let's adapt to what we have. Rafael Morrison has chosen to play for Jamaica. He's played well against Serbia. Granted, it was a practice match, but you don't have another type of player like that. Maybe Tyreek McGee, but he's not at the level of a Rafael Morrison yet either. He doesn't have that European experience.
Okay. All right. So that wraps up the football segment of our program. I'll touch a little bit now on some other areas before we get into some more weekend action. We look at just a topic of Issy now is the fastest, current fastest woman in the world at the moment, 100 meter, over 100 meter and 200 meters, fastest active female in the world, Elaine Thompson here. And she is now not attached to MVP anymore, training on her own, training with, it seems, her husband and Bert Cameron. What is your take on what's going on there, Mario?
Well, I spoke to someone about the entire thing, and the thing is, I don't know enough information, because based on what I'm hearing, it seems to be, it doesn't seem to be about the actual training,
right?
It seems to be more of an issue of value,
Well, with those performances, it couldn't really be about actual training.
So, based on what
it seemed like, it has to do more with commercial arrangements, you know, monetary, the compensation, value.
But here's a problem with that.
Mm-hmm.
Being the best athlete in the world doesn't mean you're the most marketable athlete in the world. And a lot of athletes get that wrong sometimes.
Right.
A lot of great athletes gets that. Yeah. So, for example, you think that just because you perform the best, that you mm-hmm. should just be recognized and paid the best. Especially not in this era of the world that we live in that loves character so much. For example, look at John Jones. I think John Jones is a greater fighter than Conor McGregor in terms of skill, technique.
Right.
Yeah, but there's no way John Jones is selling out an arena like Conor McGregor is.
Right.
So the reason why Usain Bolt earned all of that he earned is not even much about his record. It's about his personality. He was one of the most marketable human beings ever to exist.
Right. So there are factors there which perhaps the Elaine camp is not factoring. Possibly we don't know the full details of everything, but what I'm most disappointed with is that a few weeks ago, Elaine came out and said that everything was fine, and then now she is splitting, and then I'm hearing that there are also leaks of issues even before she wrapped. She ran in Eugene. So it seemed like something has been stirring and boiling over for a while. And I'm so sorry that she wasn't as, or doesn't appear to be as truthful in her representation.
Yeah, but you have to expect that. Yeah. You have to expect that, though, because you still want to be at first, because remember, and it goes into even the Ben Simmons issue. Mm. At first, you want to look professional. Okay, let's keep this behind closed doors. No, man, everything is fine. Everything is cool. And just behind closed doors. You kind of have to expect that from athletes first. Then when it doesn't turn your way and you really want to get out, then you start to make it ugly to me.
Yeah, but there are ways to manage that without seeming to be a blatant liar. I mean, easily there could have been no comment, you know, so you didn't really have to come out and say something which is definitely not so. There are ways in which, in today's world with skillful management teams and PR persons, there are ways in which you can manage those situations. But let's not spend any more time on that. We now move over to the West Indies T20 World Cup is on right now. I mean, it's West Indies play England on Saturday in a T20 match, their first T20 match of the tournament. I know that there were some issues about choosing some of the older players, like a Chris Gayle going. There are issues about that. I mean, arguments about that. I mean, what do you make of this T20 World Cup coming up and West Indies' chances?
I always have West Indies as favorites, even if our players aren't necessarily on form or the squad isn't together mentally, spiritually, management-wise, monetarily. For some reason, in T20 tournaments, the West Indies have some way as a team of always, no matter what drama is going on, always finding some way to get back together and eventually. It doesn't matter even who plays, because we've always heard players wanting this or some players being left out. And the West Indies have always been surrounded by drama after the Brian Lara era. So it's almost not surprising that, okay, we're having these discussions of should the older players play who are experienced. My best advice is there should be a balance now of the younger players and the older players. So let's say that you're bringing Chris Gayle. You don't have to bring like everybody who won back with Chris Gayle back in the day. You have one and two guys who are leaders who have been there and done that, sure.
Right.
And especially like Chris Gayle, who's a great talent, but also you make room for a lot of youngsters to replace them.
So all said, you have high hopes of West Indies going a far away in this tournament.
Yeah, and just one more thing. I remember talking to someone who knows a bit more about cricket than me, and he said that even here in Jamaica, how we raise the cricketers, we've almost become like experts at T20 cricket.
Mm-hmm. Just based on how we play.
It's almost like we be, and now granted, some West Indies fan will tell you, well, that has ruined the test game and it's ruined the ODI game. And that very may well be true. But if there's one place I trust the West Indies squad, is the team.
Well, you know, the similarity and the mirror I have always held up where this is concerned is that I believe that when it comes to raw talent and just, you know, rough ability, you know, nothing refined yet, countries like West Indies, like an India, a Pakistan, will always be at the top. But after you start to refine it and make it more scientific and get things more structured, then the more developed countries like an Australia, England, and maybe to a lesser extent South Africa, will start to dominate. So when one day cricket came to the fore, West Indies won the first two one day cricket championships, our World Cup. So it's no surprise that West Indies has won the last two T20 championships, because I don't think this version of the game has gotten to a level yet where the more developed countries have gotten it figured out to a science yet. So the countries with the raw talents, I think, will do well at this stage. But in a few years' time, when the more developed countries with more resources get it to a more scientific level, I think that you will start to see more talented countries like West Indies. And, well, India has the benefit of having the talent, but as well having the resources within the country that they dedicate towards the sport. So they end up doing well even after the more developed countries get seasoned into how to really win tournaments, you know. So for that, if for that reason and no more, it gives West Indies a chance, always a chance in a tournament like this. But by all other accounts, I don't think that they have the right team and setup and everything to really have a chance at being a champion. But just because the talent is there, the raw talent is there, and other countries have not yet figured out how to structure themselves to consistently win T20 championships, West Indies will always have a fighting chance. That's my take on it. Now, the NBA, turning over to American sports, the NBA season started Tuesday, this Tuesday gone. There are a few issues that are bubbling at the start of the tournament, at the start of the season. But you have the Kyrie Irving situation of him. You're not sure if he's an anti-vaxxer. He has said he's not an anti-vaxxer, but hasn't decided to be vaccinated yet. And it's causing a problem for his team, because in the state of New York, this is Brooklyn Nets. Yeah, in the state of New York, you cannot be unvaccinated and play or be in attendance in a covered arena. So that is a problem for the Brooklyn Nets. At the same time, you have the Ben Simmons situations. Any take on these situations that are bubbling in the NBA at the moment?
You see, the difficult thing about the whole anti-vaxxer thing is that there are people who aren't comfortable with just taking the vaccine, just because other people just want life to get back to normal, so that you're willing to jump in and take it. Yes. That's cool, yes. But we can't pretend like the side effects aren't real. We can't pretend like we don't know much about the vaccine and what we're putting in our body. No, most of us just have to go along with the program, be who we can afford to be. Kyrie can afford to lose 200 men. So I guess be who you can afford to be. But at the same time, there are people who are just regular, everyday people who share the same stance as Kyrie. You don't have to be labeled an anti-vaxxer, like you're a conspiracy theorist or a crazy person. Like, people, there are some people who still just think, hey, I have not given been given enough information to take the vaccine. No, of course.
And that is true, Mario, but let's look at, when you look at Kyrie Irving and his history, he has a history of not being a team player. You know, he has a history of going off on his own and rebelling and not being part of the team. He had a history at Cleveland when LeBron went there. And you could maybe say, see with him and say, perhaps we didn't know enough about that. But when he went to Celtics, the same kind of issue happened again, where he was isolated from the team. And, you know, and then Brooklyn, yeah, the same kind of issue bubbling again, even before Kevin Durant came there. So it's like there is a track record now building up for Kyrie Irving, you know, and that is something we have to factor. Let's look at Ben Simmons. He has a problem shooting. You know, he's almost like the perfect guard in every other way, but he's not a good shooter and lost confidence in last year last season's playoffs, and cost 76ers a chance to go deep for a deep championship run. And right now, he has lost confidence of the team. And that's part of bother there with the team as to how it's going to work out, because everything that's happening, I think most recently, he was suspended from practice because he was not participating in the drills. So right now, it's a situation where it's bad for the team, but it's also bad for him because his market value is kind of dropping. I mean, what's your take on that?
Again, I think Ben Simmons needs to look himself in the mirror, because I've struggled with my pride as well. But I do think it's because of how much he views himself.
Yeah,
I think he's disappointed. I think he's disappointed himself the most, and it's hard to accept that. You know, it was a large part. In all fairness, he still played well in the playoffs defensively, and still dishing out assists. But yeah, he still has to accept that, and he can't get over that mental barrier. And here's the problem. Even if you do manage to get a trade from the 76ers, until you get past this mental hurdle, it's going to crash no matter where you go, because you can't earn from yourself.
Yep. In fact, I mean, there have been suggestions. I've seen suggestions that, you know, with these two individuals being the ones who are having the most issues right now in the league, why not do a swap, you know? Why not send Kyrie to Sixers and Ben Simmons to Brooklyn, you know?
Because one, the Sixers committed to you, gave you the contract that you want. They don't owe you anything. You're the one who didn't step up when the time was called. And sure, your co-star called you out on it, your coach called you out on it, and your pride is hurt. Giannis, I always hear people use Giannis as an example. He'll miss a free throw, come right back down and get an excuse. He isn't ashamed of missing in front of people.
Yep.
So, like, Ben Simmons is prideful to a fault at times.
Yeah.
Where, okay, I don't want to feel embarrassed anymore if I take this free throw, or if I go to the rim and they follow me, I'm going to have to go to the free throw line. And he's never been a terrible free throw shooter, so you know it's a mental.
Ego is an issue here. And ego is really a big issue here. That's one of the things that he has to get over. Switching over to the NFL, this weekend, I mean, the NFL has gotten off to a fabulous start. Some very good games so far. This weekend, however, it's a bit thin in terms of the matchups. I mean, a lot of overmatched teams. Not doesn't seem like it's going to be a lot of keenly contested games. You never know. But the one game that's on my radar is the Titans versus Chiefs kicking off at noon on Sunday. Titans coming off a fresh win on Monday night. A very, very good win and over the Bills, the high-flying Buffalo Bills. And Chiefs had the crestfallen, I mean, early in the season with, I think, it's two losses, I mean, but showing up issues, I mean, having Patrick Mahomes questioning himself, wanted to go back to the drawing table, and the defense is a problem in Kansas. How do you see this matchup, Titans Chiefs on Sunday?
I see it as a high-scoring game.
Wow. But both defenses are having problems, yes?
Are both terrible. Both terrible. Yes. This defense is worse than the one they carried to the Super Bowl and the one to the last two Super Bowls.
Mm-hmm.
And then Mahomes will always be Mahomes, Tyreek is Tyreek, and Kelce is Kelce, so they'll always be able to put points on the board. I don't remember if Clyde Edwards-Helaire is still injured. And they signed Josh Gordon. Let's hope that he can stay clean. Hoping for the best for him.
Right.
Love his story, in all fairness. Yes. Despite the pitfalls, because I understand the personality and stuff. So
yeah, we're all hoping that he can come to the fore. Josh Gordon, because he has good talent, really good talent, and a story which people can sympathize with. You know, so we really hope he can come through.
And so far he's looked good. So far he's looked good. And so there will be points in this game. And then Ryan Tannehill is not the most consistent quarter. He has his games where he looks like a franchise QB. But at the same time, we know whose squad this is. It's King Henry's team.
Yep.
The Chiefs have no run defense to stop King Henry. So King Henry is going to eat against the Chiefs. But I also think Tyreek is going to eat. Kelce is going to eat. Now, who knows? Maybe Josh Gordon goes off for a big game. Because this is the defense to beat against. But it will be a shootout for this one.
So this game is being played in Nashville, Tennessee. So Titans are the home team. How do you see who wins?
I still see Mahomes pulling it off because Julio Jones and is it AJ Green? They haven't been consistent enough. Now, I would have given it to the Titans if Julio was still playing like Julio. And I don't think the receivers have clicked since Julio has come in. So I still think that will take some time. But I still give the edge to the Chiefs. I still see all of the big guys stepping up. I see Julio getting touchdowns. The King getting touchdowns. Derrick Henry. AJ Green getting touchdowns. But I also see Kelce and Tyreek doing their thing. And I think in a shootout, like Mahomes will always find a way over Tannehill.
So you're seeing Chiefs going down to Nashville and snatching a win in a high-scoring affair. Should be entertaining overall. Derrick Henry will be Derrick Henry. We'll have his day. But it won't be enough. I mean, oh, you're giving me a scoreline. Okay, great.
I see it going 30-35, maybe a field goal, a walk-off field goal.
Okay, 30-35. Okay, good stuff.
All the guys who played great won't be the decider. I think somebody's going to have to kick this.
Okay, you made us come down to the kicker. So the last thing I have on the schedule here today is the UFC.
Oh, before we go to that, can we talk about one more NFL game real quick?
Okay, real quick.
If the Chiefs game and Titans game end up becoming boring somehow, at least you can see Matt Stafford versus the Detroit Lions, Jared Goff playing against his old coach and his old team and teammates.
Okay.
And the same for Matt Stafford going to Detroit. I don't remember where the game is being played. But if there's any other game that should be entertaining this weekend, it should be that one.
Yes, could be. I mean, when you look at the talent of the teams, I mean, really, it should be the Rams should really run away with it. But just for the fact that we're talking about their Goff was traded from Rams to Detroit, it was really a switcheroo because of that. I mean, because they switched quarterbacks, there will be that sort of interest and intrigue in that game. I mean, sometimes, you know, these games go beyond what is on paper, you know, so that's a very interesting call there. That would be at 3 o'clock Jamaican time on Sunday and 4 o'clock Eastern time, US Eastern time on Sunday. I think the game is being played at, is it
SoFi
Stadium? That's Rams.
Yeah, it's at Rams.
So it's Rams.
It's at
Rams. Rams only.
Yeah, so Goff is, coming back home and let's see if, I don't know if that's going to put more pressure on him or less now that he's out of Detroit.
Yes.
And I don't know. And I think Stafford is going to be the one who's more relaxed because he's not going back home to Detroit.
Well, I think Goff coming with nothing to lose. He doesn't have clearly.
That's why I think this is going to still be interesting because he can go guns blazing with this one.
He's an underdog, doesn't have a better team. They got rid of him because they thought Stafford was a better quarterback, you know. So it's what it is. I mean, you know. So, but interesting and good selection for a alternative to watch if Titans Chief doesn't really materialize. UFC last thing, yes. Tell me about the UFC. There's a UFC tournament coming up on Saturday.
It's more of a fight night than one of the big UFC events. So okay. The reason why I wanted to point out this event is because of two reasons. The middleweight title that Israel Adesanya.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm getting that wrong. Yeah, so I don't know if it's middleweight or welterweight title. But Marvin Vettori and Paulo Costa, it's middleweight. Marvin Vettori and Paulo Costa both lost to Israel Adesanya. Now, both of these guys are usually like muscle heads. They're brawlers. They're not. It's not much technique, but they're going to give you a brawl. So it should be entertaining.
Okay.
But it should be more like a street fight. Now, Vettori has been a bit more sharper with his technique. So he has that over Paulo Costa. But both of these guys fight with their emotion. And that's the problem with both of them.
Okay. All right.
So it should be an entertaining fight just for like, you know, just for a fight
with, on Saturday. With Victor going to?
Marvin Vettori. I just think that he's still a better technically than Paulo Costa. He can do both. Paulo Costa can brawl. But once he goes up against an opponent with technique, like Adesanya did, he can pick him apart easily. Vettori can do both.
Okay, so there you have it, folks.
One more thing.
Yes, sir.
There is just because you know we're from the Caribbean, you know, I want to support Jocelyn Edwards. She's on a 2-win fight streak in the UFC. She's from I think the Dominican Republic.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
A very exciting young fighter so far. 10-3 record, 2-win fight streak, and she's fighting on the same card.
Excellent. Excellent insights, Mario. Thanks for bringing our attention to that Caribbean interest there in the UFC.
She's a really good fighter, you know, like she's actually exciting to watch. Like she's good.
Okay. So I mean, it's one to look into. The UFC is an exciting sporting competition, really. I mean, even sometimes I consider it even more exciting than boxing sometimes because it's really everything allowed. So there you have it, folks. On the calendar for this weekend, you can see it's well laden with lots of action. I mean, starting with Saturday with T20 World Cup match, England and West Indies. But on Sunday you'll have a full slate of games across Europe. Man U, Liverpool, El Clasico, Juve, Inter Milan, and Marseille, and PSG. Then you'll have the NFL as well. Titans, Chiefs, we highlighted that. So a lot of action to look forward to, I mean, for this weekend. I mean, you really won't be starved for entertainment. Thanks for joining us. Mario, you know, has shown his prowess. I mean, looking, scanning the globe, looking at all of more interesting sporting events. And if we had an hour or two more, I'm sure he'd keep on going and pointing out lots more interesting things for us to look at and tune into. But keep it there for now. Mario is from the Live Sports group. You can listen to their podcast anywhere you get your podcast from. Live Sports podcast is issued through which media, Mario?
Anchor and Spotify. So you can get Anchor and Spotify.
Okay. Excellent. So there you have it.
And that Live Sports is LIVSPORTS. Yes. So okay. A lot of people
L-I-V.
Still for the E. Yeah.
Yes. No E. LIVSPORTS. Live Sports. Okay. Excellent. All right. So we'll catch you again next weekend or next week about the same time to look at that slate of action coming up. But for now, we're out.